It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Brett, our team rode in two MH-60 Sierra helicopters. We took off from the Homestead Air Force Base, flew over the Florida Keys, and landed on the USS Abraham Lincoln, which is stationed just outside of the Keys right now, here to help Irma victims. There are parts of the Keys where there is extreme destruction, boats mangled and piled together like toys, a foul odor even from the air. The Navy crews are flying off the Abe Lincoln around the clock in choppers, primarily looking for victims, and fortunately there are none yet, but also around the clock, they are dropping off water in huge pallets containing 5-gallon jugs that was salt water purified on the ship and delivered by air. The captain says this is the first time ever the Lincoln has done a domestic mission to help American hurricane victims, and it's especially emotional because some men and women aboard have friends and family in the Keys. Here's more of what the captain had to say.
Sometimes the neat thing about an aircraft carrier is we can get, we don't have to travel over land, obviously, and we can get to an area in distress quickly. And that's what we're doing here. This is some of our first operations, so it's good for the sailors to see, and it's good for the sailors to see how they can help out in a positive way.
The U.S. Abraham Lincoln has been in the area since Saturday, and it will stay as needed. Now, back here in Miami, there is still a huge gas shortage. You're lucky to find a gas station open, and if you do, you face very long lines. Also, hard-pressed to find grocery stores, and there are still entire neighborhoods that look like ghost towns.
Okay, Sandy Rios with you this morning on Wednesday. That was Matt Finn of Fox News giving us sort of some of the good things that are happening, the U.S. military, the Navy kind of entering in and the rescue efforts. At least in Florida, probably in Houston as well. But we're getting mixed reviews about the help that's going in there. Now the bad news comes in. You know, we talked and still should emphasize the heroic efforts and just the generosity of people is just unbelievable. I think both areas, both Texas and Florida, have a lot to be proud of in terms of their response and the people. A lot of loss, but a lot of bravery and courage and grit exhibited in both of those states. And now the long haul sets in and the reality of that damage. And so various, you know, relief organizations have gone in. I have to say, I saw, now this is unverified because it was on Facebook, but it came from a source that I trust sharing it. And in fact, it's going to find its way all the way up to the White House probably today, if it hasn't already. But the person on the Facebook post out of this would be in the Houston area. Someone I believe that's part of the Cajun Navy said that the Salvation Army has been taking supplies brought in by volunteers and helpers and just helping themselves to it, throwing things away, reselling items. We will have to check into that. But I mention that only because you do have to be careful who you give your money to. You just must. Because you can't trust all of these organizations. We'll wait and see what they say about the Red Cross. I don't want to impugn them until we know that for sure. I do recognize the Red Cross has not been the same organization for a very long time. Not that I've heard the reports of this before, but I just think you have to be careful who you trust. We, of course, are working with 8 Days of Hope. 8 Days of Hope, you guys have been so generous with your gifts to them, and we recommend that you go to AFA.net and make your most generous donation. The second thing I think would be Samaritan's Purse. Franklin Graham's Samaritan's Purse. Those are two entities that you can trust. So just be wise as you help, okay? I know we all want to do that. And of course, now on Capitol Hill, they're going to be grappling with all the money they want to give. Mike Emanuel has a report from Fox. Let's listen.
The devastation after Hurricanes Harvey and Irma suggests cleanup and rebuilding will be massive and expensive.
Congress authorized and President Trump signed $15.25 billion in hurricane relief last week. But all expect that is just the first installment of taxpayer money to help storm victims rebuild. More than 708,000 Texans have already applied for FEMA assistance, and Floridians will soon do the same.
This is a big-hearted country, and we're going to cover these emergencies as we have in the past. Obviously, these are bigger than we are customarily dealing with, but we will take care of it.
Any offsets down the road?
We'll take care of it.
On paying for hurricane relief, what are known as offsets, the Senate Democratic leader rejected that idea.
We've had a tradition in America when it comes to disaster that one part of the country is hurt and the rest of the country steps up and aids them.
Yet the nation's debt has ballooned from $5 trillion in 1996 to $10 trillion in 2008 to $20 trillion now.
The greatest threat to our nation is we ourselves. It's our inability to deal with the fiscal issues that we as a nation have.
Even though Harvey trashed southeastern Texas, four of its House members voted no on the legislation. Republicans Joe Barton, Jeb Hensarling, Sam Johnson, and Mac Thornberry.
The debt ceiling is an awkward, blunt tool, but it should be something more than a speed bump on the road to national bankruptcy. That should have been a separate vote.
A Fox News comparison of gross debt as a percentage of GDP reveals the U.S. comes in fourth behind Japan, Greece, and Italy. The House Republican Study Committee consists of 155 members. Its chairman says with Republicans leading the White House and Congress, it's time to address these serious financial issues.
We have been asking for several months that there be some kind of reforms attached to the debt ceiling. Those requests were not met or were not heard, but we're not giving up.
Well, at least a handful are not giving up. I have to say, and I have said probably twice in the last few weeks, that the debt ceiling in our financial situation is so crucial, and we don't hear it discussed enough. It's just passed off. Oh, we'll pass a short-term funding bill for 3 months. Oh, we'll raise the debt ceiling. Oh, we'll do this. And it just gets worse and worse and worse, and now $20 trillion in debt. And that's so dangerous. Did you hear that lineup? They were number four behind Greece and whatever the other three countries were. And they are in Japan. They're in terrible financial shape, and so that's where we are now. Because you heard Mitch McConnell in that little, he was asked, someone shouted out in this press briefing, are there going to be any offsets? Meaning, are you going to cut the budget anywhere in any way? Are you taking anything out? Are you trimming any kind of fat in order to do this? No. And the reason is because we're a generous nation. You know, we just, when we have disaster, well, yes, we're generous. But it's, I don't think one calls it generous when you end up giving away everything that you have and you can't support if it's your own personal family. If you bankrupt your family, then your children are destitute. I'm not sure that the term generous would apply to the dad of that family. And yet that's what we're doing. So you'll hear more about this. You know you will. As the Congress, you know, is back at work this week, oh, for better or for worse, probably for worse. Sometimes it's better when they stay home. But they'll be back at work, you know, putting us more in debt. There's just no question about it. And then, of course, last night was a fundraiser, a hurricane telethon. I think, you know, this is like, well, politicians on Capitol Hill are trying to, you know, win elections because showing, you know, trying to outdo each other with how generous they are. Well, you know, so celebrities from the West Coast and the East Coast are trying to outdo themselves, showing how wonderful they are by trying to raise money. And this is how it started last night. One of my favorite singers, has been for decades, Stevie Wonder, starts the program, and this is how he starts it.
We've come together today to love on the people that have been devastated by the hurricanes. When love goes into action, it prefaces no color of skin, no ethnicity, no religious beliefs, no sexual preferences, and no political persuasions. It just loves. As we should begin to love and value our planet and anyone who believes that there is no such thing as global warming must be blind or unintelligent. Lord, please save us all.
All right. Well, thank you, Stevie. Yeah, you know, I think that's what we saw. Did we not? Did we not see with our own eyes? Did people not call in and testify and say on television how they saw the rescue efforts being colorblind, and how that was one of the most moving things was just there were no differences made. People were just helping people. And evidently, maybe Stevie couldn't see that because he is blind. Maybe all he knows is what people told him. I don't know. But there he is last night bringing that, you know, rubbing that sore again. And then, of course, saying that anybody that doesn't believe in global warming, because, of course, the hurricanes were caused by us, right? That's the inference, naturally. You know, and this is sort of a tradition of these telethons to raise money. Oh, last night, by the way, let's see, our famous lineup, Oprah Winfrey, Justin Timberlake, George Clooney, Julia Roberts, Dennis Quaid, Adam Sandler, Leonardo DiCaprio, Gwen Stefani, Ray Romano, Beyonce. And, you know, I'm just getting so sick of them. I can hardly hear them sing or, and now Stevie Wonder is going to take he's going to have to do a lot more bad things before I cannot stand to hear him sing. But I just can't, go home. All of you, just be quiet, help people and stop stirring and stoking the fires of racism and division in this country. After these terrible disasters really have done quite, I think, a lot to soften hearts and bring people together, but not, you know, not in the way the celebrities wanted. So they were raising money last night. You know, they did that back in 2005 with Mike Meyer and Kanye West. And actually, I'm not going to play the clip after all because of time here. But Kanye West goes in and says, you know, the George Bush doesn't care anything about black people. He's talking about Katrina. We all remember how they used, meaning the left, used that hurricane to just completely divide the country racially. And anyway, so... yeah, so people are using it in every way, whether it's politicians or celebrities. I want to, let's see, do I have time? I think I do. This is an article that I meant to share with you yesterday, and I'm going to stop and share it right now, if you will allow me. Yesterday was the anniversary of 9/11, but it was also the anniversary, I mean Monday. And Monday was also the anniversary of Benghazi, and I didn't have a chance to mention it, and I want to, because Catherine Herridge has this incredible report on Fox. I'm going to do my best to share as much as I can with you, but we'll put it on our Facebook page so that you can read it in its entirety. You know, I think I've told you, I covered Benghazi so closely, but it's been a while now, that there were lots of people involved in Benghazi who were never able to speak. There were a lot of people injured who we never heard about because they were required to sign waivers. I know that they were interviewed in hospitals privately by people that I knew. And there were lots more stories than the four who were killed, including Ambassador Chris Stevens. So here's what Catherine's reporting. Security at the State Department's Benghazi compound was so dire that another contractor was brought in to clean up the mess just 2 weeks before the 2012 terror attack and was later pressured to keep quiet by a government bureaucrat under then-Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, according to two men from the American Security Company. Why is this relevant? Because Hillary Clinton is out yakking now about her new book, complaining about why she didn't win the presidency. And I want to bring you back to one of the reasons why she should never, never have been Secretary of State and certainly disqualified from being president. Brad Owens and Jerry Torres of Torres Advanced Enterprise Solutions say they faced pressure to stay silent and get on the same page with the State Department with regard to security lapses that led to the deaths of four Americans. They spoke on Tucker Carlson tonight. Some of you might have seen it, revealing new information about what happened during that 13-hour assault from September 11th to the 12th. Torres Advanced Enterprise Solutions provides security for U.S. Embassy and consulate personnel around the world. It's one of the most reputable. They say Jerry Torres says he remains haunted by the fact specific bureaucrats and policies remain in the State Department after the Benghazi attack, despite the change in administration. He said a U.S. ambassador is dead and nobody is held accountable for it. And three guys all died trying to defend him. Goes into great detail, which I actually am going to try to come back to this a little bit later because I want to comment on some of this. They bid on the contract to support the embassy, and they were outbid by a group called Blue Mountain. And I've mentioned Blue Mountain to you before because Mike Rogers, who was chairman of the intelligence committee at the time, his wife was involved with Blue Mountain and got that contract. You remember that Congressman Rogers resigned mysteriously from Congress, and also that Mike Rogers stood against, along with John Boehner, any kind of investigation, special investigation, into Benghazi. And we always, the accusation just sat there by people in the know that there was something untoward in that situation. But there's a lot more to that, and I'm going to try to come back to that article. Right now, we're going to turn our attention to judicial nominations because it's a circus, a dangerous circus going on Capitol Hill I want you to know about. Sandy Rios in the morning.
So what would you do with an extra $500 a month in your budget? $500. This isn't hypothetical, by the way. This is something you may need to think about very soon if you decide to become a member of MediShare. MediShare is a way to pay for your health care, and typically it costs $500 less per month for a family versus other health care plans. So seriously, think about this. You could pay off loans, pay down a mortgage, save the money for retirement, donate to charity. That would be a big deal. But you know what? Here's the best thing. MediShare works. It has 250,000 members, and it's growing fast. With MediShare, not only do you save, you don't have to pay for things you don't believe in either, and that is a beautiful thing too. So here's how you can find out more, and you might actually wind up saving even more than $500 a month. So check into it. Here's the number. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23, now available in Montana. 855-PSALM-23.
Steve Russo with Real Answers.
In the early 1900s, a young army captain was sent to spy on the enemy. Returning from his mission, the captain was ambushed on three different occasions as bandits opened fire during the chase. When he arrived the next morning, his shirt was riddled with bullet holes, yet Douglas MacArthur's body didn't have one scratch. Some say he was unharmed because he was destined for something special. He would move up the ranks to become one of the most celebrated generals in history during his command in World War II. What are you destined to accomplish? Each one of our lives are meant to count for something. In order to make a lasting impact, we must become risk takers. So why not let go today and let God?
To stay on the right path, you need real guidance and real answers. For help, visit Steve's website, www.realanswers.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
Hey, my name is Aaron Abbs. I am an undecided major, and I'm a freshman here at TMU. And as soon as I came here, I fell in love with the campus. Like, I knew, like, God was calling me to be here at TMU. And, you know, I couldn't get a better education than this. Like, professors who pray before class, who care about your spiritual walk with Christ. You are who you are, and they care about you.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
TSA has quietly launched a new enhanced pat-down procedure, and folks, it's as bad as you might imagine. John McCormick writes for Weekly Standard. The other day, he was subjected to the new procedures, forced to undergo a hand swab to check for explosives. Afterwards, a TSA agent thrust his hands inside Mr. McCormick's pants. Since this is a family-friendly radio station, I will not tell you what happened next, but it was invasive, inappropriate, and downright scandalous. I really would like someone from TSA to explain how violating a law-abiding airline passenger makes America safer. For whatever reason, there are people who would gladly give up some of their freedom to be safer. I contend that sort of mindset makes us less safe. You know, if TSA really wants to protect Americans, maybe they should stop manhandling grandmas and start profiling the demographic most likely to blow us up. I'm Todd Stearns.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
When you read your speeches, the conclusion one draws is that the dogma lives loudly within you. And that's of concern when you come to big issues that large numbers of people have fought for years in this country.
Wow. We played that a few days ago. That was Senator Dianne Feinstein from San Francisco grilling a law professor from Notre Dame named Amy Comey Barrett, who is being considered for the, I think it's the Seventh Circuit out of Chicago. And Amy happens to be a strong Catholic, and you know, John Cass out of the Chicago Tribune, who's one of my favorites, you know, I'm a Chicago gal, he said that it evokes a line of inquiry from an earlier age, one asked of leftists during the Cold War, but now directed by the political left at Americans of faith. Concealed in their velvet voices was this meaning, this underlying shiv: are you now, or have you ever been, a Christian? Well, there's a lot to consider today as we think about the judicial nominations that have been made by President Trump and now how they're trying to be vetted through the Senate. There's a lot of chicanery going on. It's been going on for a long time, but it's getting worse. No one knows this better than Carrie Severino, who is the chief counsel and policy director for the Judicial Crisis Network, who joins us this morning. Good morning, Carrie.
Good morning, Sandy. How are you doing?
I'm good, and I always appreciate your time, Carrie. Let me just ask a couple of simple questions before we get into the particulars. Overall, how do you think the Trump administration is doing with this judicial nomination process? Are some managing to get through?
Yes, but not very many. So he started office with 105 vacancies, and he's had, since January now, six total confirmations. But, boy, the numbers of vacancies have actually skyrocketed. So now we're up in the 140s. So he's had literally just about a handful of people confirmed, and he has a lot more nominees. He's got 47 nominees out there, all of whom I'm just really thrilled with, very excellent, like Professor Barrett, who was testifying the other day and was subjected to that anti-Catholic diatribe by Senator Feinstein. But it's been great on the front end and getting the nominees out there. What we see now is Democrats using every technique they can find, exploiting Senate rules and abusing some of these procedures, and now even sinking to anti-Catholic bigotry and really anti-Christian bigotry, because what she's saying is anyone who might be personally pro-life isn't suitable for the federal bench. They're just doing everything they can to stop these nominees from moving forward. And unfortunately, up until now, they've been relatively successful.
You know, that reminds me, I'm just trying to remember who that was, Carrie. It does bleed over into non-Catholics. This wasn't a judicial nomination, but it was Russ, who was nominated by, I'm sorry, you don't have the names in front of me, but he's from Heritage originally. He's a strong evangelical, mm-hmm. and he was being nominated for a post in the Trump campaign. And during his nomination process, they threw it up to him that he was a strong evangelical. So this is a trend, mm-hmm. and it is anti-Christian in the broadest sense. And what it means, Carrie, if we get to the end of this, it means that Christians will not be able, if they succeed in this slander, Christians will not be able to serve in public office. Would you agree with that?
Well, I think that absolutely seems to be their intent, and it's profoundly opposed to the very text of our Constitution, which says there should be no religious test for office. And what some of these Democrats seem to be saying is, yeah, but if you really believe this stuff, we can't trust you with the levers of power. That's really shocking. It's certainly something that would make our framers turn over in their grave, right? But it's very worrisome, and I just encouraged to see the pushback that we've seen from that on this, because we cannot stand by and allow the Democratic senators, as you mentioned with Russ Brock, who's the other person, you can't stand by and allow them to basically create a religious test for office and say, unless you are willing to disavow your faith, you can't serve in the United States government.
You know, I think it's worth repeating that Reverend John Jenkins, who's the president of Notre Dame, wrote a response. Dick Durbin was one of the chief, besides Dianne Feinstein, it's not just Dianne Feinstein, it's Senator Durbin. And this is what John Jenkins responded. He said, "It is chilling to hear from a United States senator that this might now disqualify someone from service as a federal judge. I ask you and your colleagues to respect those in whom dogma lives loudly," he's quoting Feinstein, "which is a condition we all call faith. For the attempt to live such faith, while one upholds the law, should command respect, not evoke concern." I thought that was a great comeback, Carrie.
Mm. I absolutely. And it's also ironic, too, because what was going on this all came out of an article that Professor Barrett wrote, where she's saying if someone has on religious grounds opposition to the death penalty, what can they do if they're a judge? And what she said is exactly the right answer. Not that you can substitute your view on the death penalty for what American law is, but if you find yourself in a position where it violates your conscience to carry out a certain sentence or something, you can recuse yourself in that case. So it was actually a very smart way of figuring out how can you reconcile these things, and that's the right answer. It's not my views trump the law. It's like, oh, if they're incompatible, I'm not going to set my beliefs aside, but I don't. You also can't then substitute that for the law, and I think what we're seeing here is a lot of senators who want to substitute their own religious beliefs maybe on the other side for what the law of the United States is saying. And that's simply not what our country is founded on. we need to be able to have a system where people can abide by their own deeply held principles, and we can respect that. But unfortunately, I think they've said that they can respect that only as long as it's the same principles they share. I mean, what Bernie Sanders was complaining about was simply this nominee in Office of Management and Budget nominee, so hardly something that addresses religious issues, that he basically believed that, you know, to be saved, you needed to believe in Jesus Christ. And that's not a controversial belief among a lot of people. This is something held by many Americans. But unfortunately, it's one that seems at odds with the direction a lot of these Democrats are trying to take the country.
Yeah, I'm going to insert it. This John Cass article is so good out of the Trib. So forgive me, Carrie, from quoting him so much this morning. But he says, this is what he says about Dick Durbin. Durbin is a Catholic Democrat from Blue, Illinois, and he seeks votes in Chicago. That he would ask whether someone was an Orthodox Catholic, which he did ask, are you an Orthodox Catholic, is stunning. Chicago, John says, is a Catholic town, a Democratic organization town in which parishes help form the backbone of the Democratic machine. The numbers of churchgoers across America is dwindling, including Chicago Catholics, but there are many who stay true to their faith. But it really is flabbergasting. And this has been going on, Carrie, since I was at CWA. I remember sitting in that Judiciary Committee room hearing and listening to those senators. I don't know how you stand it. Do you go to all those hearings?
I don't go to all of them, but I try to listen to as many of them as I can, especially these appellate nominees. And boy, I think we're probably going to be in for some more because, again, Trump is making these great nominations, but some of them are people who have who personally have a strong faith life or who have spent time working for causes such as religious freedom. I mean, that's another thing that came out during this hearing is Senator Franken took Professor Barrett to task for having spoken at an event that the Alliance Defending Freedom hosted. And the discredited Southern Poverty Law Center, who basically just kind of goes around slapping labels at this point on people, had called them a hate group because of their position that was in favor of religious freedom, because they viewed that as a bigoted position, in terms of their views on LGBT issues. So now it's gotten to the point where this group, which is a well-regarded, highly successful Supreme Court litigators, that's going to be litigating this Masterpiece Cake Shop case this term. They litigated the Trinity Lutheran case last term. They're great lawyers. They're being called a hate group by senators simply because they disagree with their position on religious freedom. That's truly chilling, and it's a pattern that I think we need to stop in its tracks, and someone needs to call them out, saying these are some of our, again, this is a constitutional principle. These are our foundational American values of religious freedom, and we need to stand firm for those.
Now, Amy Coney Barrett, the professor from Notre Dame that we're talking about, who was sort of the object of this religious bigotry wrath from Durbin and Feinstein and Al Franken, what is the status then? I mean, what's the status of her nomination?
Well, you know, the ridiculous thing is her nomination, as far as I can tell, has full support of the Republican senators. And I think is going to proceed. She's going to be confirmed, no problem. What they're trying to do, I think, is make it so that anyone who is someone of faith or perhaps the administration, as they're considering who to nominate, wants to disqualify people, or people are worried and may just take themselves out of the mix because they know that their faith is going to get attacked in a ugly confirmation hearing or something like that. I think there should be no doubt that she's going to be confirmed. She's incredibly qualified. She's brilliant. That's frankly why the left, I think, is so scared of her. They're very intimidated, including Senator Feinstein, by articulate conservative women in particular. So they don't want someone on the bench who's going to be a great voice for that and undermine their kind of identity politics approach to the world. But I do think she'll be confirmed. I just hope that this isn't something that either the administration or other nominees allow to intimidate them, because really that is what it is. It's kind of a bullying to say, hey, you really want to have your family, your career, you know, dragged through an ugly process. Well, if you are a Christian and you are nominated for one of these things, we're going to make it as hard as possible. Maybe you should just step aside. And I think that would be a real tragedy.
Yeah, and of course, the second thing that's going on here that's equally, it's a procedural concern, and that's the blue slip. We've got Justice David Strauss from the Minnesota Supreme Court being nominated for the Eighth Circuit, and here's Al Franken interfering again. Explain this.
Yeah, this is, so the blue slips are a senatorial courtesy where home state senators for a seat are allowed an extra voice in just saying, do I approve or disapprove of a nominee. And now, while David Strauss is being nominated for a position in the Eighth Circuit that covers several states, because he's from Minnesota, Franken has one of the blue slips, and he's refusing to turn it in. And he's hoping that that's going to make the Senate Judiciary Committee grind to a halt and just not even process the nomination. We are really encouraging Senator Grassley, who's the head of the committee, to say, no, that's not what these are for. You can't just leave this person in limbo indefinitely because one senator is being intransigent. He shouldn't have a veto on someone who is, again, so highly qualified. He has judges. He's the justice in the Minnesota Supreme Court. He has justices he has served with on both sides of the aisle saying, this guy is so principled. He's great. How can you block him? So that's one of these cases where they're taking a Senate procedure that is out there and has a history, but not one of let's use this to just block nominees down the line. And unfortunately, they're trying to just every trick in the book to either waste time on the nominees, so it's going to take forever to get Trump's nominees through, or to block them if they can. And I would say the Republicans cannot capitulate to that. I hope Senator Grassley says, you know what, courtesy is courtesy, but if you are not showing any courtesy yourself, if you're abusing the process, we're going to move forward. Because, again, these are people who have majority support. This is not someone who's controversial. He's a great judge, and he'll be great on the Eighth Circuit.
You know, we should be clear, too, about what Franken said about this is the thing that Franken has against Justice Strauss. This is Franken's statement. Earlier in his career, Justice Strauss worked as a law clerk for Justice Thomas, one of the Supreme Court's most conservative members. Justice Strauss has described Justice Thomas as a mentor and even hosted an event by Conservative Federalist Society. And it goes on and on. And he goes on to link him. He makes all kinds of accusations. And having been linked to Justice Thomas and Justice Scalia is the reason that Al Franken is refusing to hand in his blue slip or whatever you do to a blue slip to let the nomination go forward. All right, so what do you think is going to happen? I mean, do you think that Grassley, my understanding is that he has never, ever brought up a nomination. He's chairman of the committee. That in the history of him and Pat Leahy, that neither of them have ever brought forward a nomination for a judge out of a state if there was not a blue slip sign-off from the senators of that state. What do you think is going to happen?
Oh, I think that Grassley is going to realize that this is something that is at this point has become an abuse of the process. There's a long history. I mean, Leahy was more strict about these than most judiciary committees have been. Under Senator Kennedy, when he was leading the Judiciary Committee, Senator Biden, Senator Hatch, all of them said, not turning in a blue slip doesn't mean we have to stop the process. We can move forward, and they did. And I think that's what Grassley's going to realize he has to do. But we have to make sure we are encouraging him. And he's going to get criticism because, of course, what the Democrats are trying to do is pretend that every single thing that the Republicans do to move forward, even at a snail's pace, is somehow controversial or novel. Simply not true, but we need to make sure that we're there saying, we know the story. This is unprecedented levels of opposition, and so you need to move forward, and this is not the time to, have extra levels of deference when you're showing no deference whatsoever. It's not a rule, even. It's just a matter of, should we wait for this senator? And not when the senator's just announced that on purely partisan reasons, really, because he thinks he'll turn out like Justice Thomas and Justice Scalia, which in my book is a home run.
Right, exactly.
He doesn't want him on the court. He shouldn't be allowed to block single-handedly a judge that has majority support in the United States Senate.
Carrie, we only have a minute left, but why is it taking so long? Well, aside from these two reasons, are there other things they're doing to slow this down, and are the Republicans complicit in this too?
Well, there's one other technique they're using, and that is a procedure where they, instead of allowing a vote to move forward, they force them to have what's called a cloture vote, and then they get 30 hours to debate the nominee. This is something that used to be reserved for controversial nominees and in unusual cases. Now Democrats have done it for every single Trump judicial nominee, and they're trying to do it to the administration nominees, too. At this point, Leader McConnell said on the floor, if they keep doing this for all of these nominees, it'll take 11 years to get the positions filled. I mean, that's more time than any president has in office. That is simply unacceptable.
So Senator McConnell needs to do something about that, and the Senator Grassley.
I think it would require a rule change, unfortunately, and that means we got to get a lot of senators voting. So encourage your senator to get rid of that time wasting rule.
You know what? AFA is all over that. We've been really all over the whole filibuster rule, and so we'll continue to do that. Carrie, a national treasure, Carrie Severino, Chief Counsel and Policy Director for the Judicial Crisis Network. Carrie, hopefully we can talk again soon. Thank you so much.
Great chatting with you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is a Hamilton Corner. Often people refer to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s speeches in excerpts and soundbites. We do well, however, to remember these words from the I Have a Dream speech. In the process of gaining our rightful place, we must not be guilty of wrongful deeds. Let us not seek to satisfy our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of bitterness and hatred. Our nation is more divided now than ever before in my lifetime. We must be careful not to confuse hatred and bitterness with righteous indignation. One leads towards God's heart being revealed. The other comes from the evil one.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Many in America seem to have forgotten that its foundation was built on God. In this 40th year celebration of the American Family Association, we invite you to help us remind America once again of the truth behind our national motto, In God We Trust. You can do your part and display your faith with an In God We Trust car decal from the AFA store. Order yours today with free shipping at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
Have your dreams been shattered? Here's Pastor Jeff Shreve with From His Heart Ministries.
Somebody told me early in my ministry, he said, you know, if you preach to broken hearts, you'll always have an audience. And I don't know what your need is today, but God does his best work in the midst of broken, shattered dreams.
Find real hope in Christ. Join Pastor Jeff Shreve on From His Heart, weeknights at 6 Central, here on American Family Radio.
You know, the Bible describes Jesus' last days on planet Earth. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman with American Family Association and American Family Radio. We're going to Israel, the Holy Land, March 8th through the 16th. And we'll be visiting those places that the Bible mentions in Jesus' last days, including his time in the Garden of Gethsemane, which is on the Mount of Olives. We're also going to go to the house of Caiaphas and see the very steps that Jesus walked on his way there from the Garden of Gethsemane. And then finally, that day we'll be going to the Via Dolorosa, the path that Jesus walked to the cross. So it's going to be a fantastic time in Israel as we see what happened to Jesus and we talk about the hope that we have in his resurrection. For more information, go to the website twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com. Or call 800-FAMILIES, option 5. 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The Supreme Court yesterday again stopped a lower court from interfering with Donald Trump's so-called travel ban. This is another promising sign of how the justices may ultimately rule when they take up the president's immigration pause next month. Yet to be publicly addressed by the judicial or any other branch of government, however, is the reason this pause is so needed. To put into place a means of performing what Mr. Trump has called extreme vetting in order to stop importing more jihadists. Such a filter has been recommended by 5 other national security experts and myself in a friend of the court brief filed last month in connection with this case. Just as we previously used an ideological test to prevent Nazis and communists from coming to this country, now we must keep out Sharia supremacists. This is Frank Gaffney. Read the amicus brief at securefreedom.org.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I went from, I think, 26 points ahead to 13 points ahead. And I needed about 18 points in order to be sure I could win Pennsylvania. I watched how analysts, who I have a great deal of respect for, like Nate Silver, burrowed into all the data and said, but for that Comey letter, she would have won. So it was very personal to me. I think my general election prospects were so badly damaged because of that, that even though I was starting to come back, it was not enough time to overcome it. But even though that was the primary blow to my campaign at the very end, it has to be looked at in context with the Russians weaponizing information, negative stories about me, this whole WikiLeaks beginning to leak in early October of John Podesta's emails, which if you've read them all, they're pretty anodyne, but they were taken out of context. The stories were made up about them. We now know Facebook was taking money from Russian companies to run negative stories about me. If you look at all of this, yes, it affected me and my campaign, but I am more concerned now going forward that we haven't come to grips with what it means for future elections. I would also add that the voter suppression that we now know had been in the works and really put into effect in a lot of states like Wisconsin, North Carolina, et cetera, played a role. And then let's not forget sexism and misogyny, which are endemic to our society. And certainly, as I write in my chapter called On Being a Woman in Politics, have to be factored in as well.
You know, all I can say is, aren't you grateful? I am, that Hillary Clinton's not president. That was an amazing interview, and she's going to be out all over the place. She is. I could play endless clips, and each and every one of those things would could command, you know, a 45-minute discussion on what she's blaming, whether it's voter ID laws, voter suppression, she calls it, sexism, misogyny. It was Jim Comey's fault, when many say that it was actually him who saved her, kept her from going down faster than she would have. Russia, Facebook, you know, running fake stories in order to defeat Hillary. WikiLeaks, and then she says that the Podesta email were basically anodyne. There was really nothing to them. There were stories made up. I can tell you, I read those email, a lot of them. I read them to you. That's just absolutely false. But we could spend a lot of time refuting all of that. But rather than do that, I want to, two things I want to mention to you. I think this is really interesting because, you know, her attorneys got away, really, I won't say with murder, because that's an overstatement, and we have plenty of cases where that's actually literally true. Cheryl Mills, Heather Samuelson, and David Kendall complied, we think, we're pretty sure, with hiding her email accounts and with destroying evidence. And so there's been an effort to get them disbarred in Maryland, but no judge would do it. They kept dismissing the case, dismissing. And finally, there is a judge in Maryland, of all places, the People's Republic of Maryland, we like to call it in the Northeast, who said in a hearing Monday, there are allegations of destroying evidence. And he said the state's rules require the bar to conduct investigations no matter who raises the complaint, and he cannot brush aside those accusations. So that's a very big deal, that Circuit Judge Paul F. Harris is saying that complaints lodged against David Kendall, Cheryl Mills, and Heather Samuelson are going to go ahead. You know what? I got the wrong name. That judge is not the one. It is the one. I want to make sure I got that right because there's been so many opponents, and I want to get the right judge that did the right thing. It's Circuit Judge Paul F. Harris. So he's moving ahead in Maryland to see if they should be disbarred. And I just, that's the way, that's justice. That's if indeed they were the ones, and they likely were. We know Cheryl Mills. Remember, James Comey actually gave the computers back to Cheryl Mills and Heather Samuelson. Didn't even keep them and didn't even look into them. It really is a stunning story. And maybe as history unfolds, we'll know even more than we know today. But the main reason that Mrs. Clinton should not be president of the United States ever, 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 goes back to the article I began to read to you earlier today. It's in Fox. It's a report by Catherine Herridge, and I'm going to go back to it because I want you to hear this. The anniversary of the Benghazi attacks also were on 9/11 on Monday, and there were two contractors who've done extensive work protecting embassies and giving protection worldwide in very dangerous situations. They're the two top ones, and they were approached about securing Benghazi, and they actually went, and they were asked, as were so many on that fateful night, that 13-hour attack, they were asked to sign a disclosure or a statement that they would not, a non-disclosure statement, And I told you there were many people injured that night whose names you've never heard. And they were in hospitals in D.C., and the people, again, that I knew went to do interviews with them and were not allowed to release the information. But people on the inside and some of us knew about some of these stories. But these two contractors now tell an additional side of this story. And they are, let's see, one of them is Jerry Torres. Torres Advanced Enterprise Solutions provides security for U.S. embassies and consulate personnel around the world in some of the most dangerous locations spanning Africa, the Middle East, and South America. And he and his partner, Brad Owens, Brad is a former Army intelligence officer, and he said those who made poor choices that actually, I would say, were more responsible for the Benghazi attacks than anyone else, they're still in the same positions, making security choices for our embassies overseas right now. And this is how they said it came down. After the death of Libyan dictator Muammar Gaddafi, Owens stressed to Fox News it was well known that Islamic radicals, including Al-Qaeda-tied militias, were pouring into the region and security had deteriorated considerably. Based on documents reviewed by Fox, Torres Advanced Enterprise Solutions bid on the Benghazi compound security contract in the spring of 2012, but the State Department awarded the deal to a UK-based operation called the Blue Mountain Group. And I alluded to that earlier when I was discussing this. The Blue Mountain Group, in some form or fashion, Mike Rogers, who was the chairman of the Intelligence Committee at the time, former FBI agent, his wife was an executive with Blue Mountain. I can't give you her exact role, but it was raised as a huge red flag when we were trying to figure out why John Boehner, Mike Rogers, and others in the House were refusing to form a Benghazi committee to really investigate what the truth was, when we all knew there was so much rottenness going on. And we had so many experts lined up to pull out testimony, to write about this, who had firsthand information, like I mentioned to you once, that were interviewing people in the hospitals. And the House, the Boehner staff, didn't want to hear anything about it. And they did everything they could to stop an investigation. And then eventually, you remember, Mike Rogers resigned. They said he was going to be doing talk radio. Remember that? He has, as far as I know, he hasn't done, I don't know what he's doing. It's been silence. And he was a person who was praised and said to have a bright future. But now he's gone. He resigned mysteriously. And his wife was involved in this group that was assigned to do the security at the Benghazi complex. But there's more to this story. Brad Owens, who had personally visited the Benghazi compound to assess security, was shocked. Blue Mountain UK is a teeny tiny little security company registered in Wales that had never had a diplomatic security contract. They'd never done any high-level contracts anywhere else in the world we've been able to find, much less in high-threat areas for the U.S. government. They had a few guys on the ground, but they came in 4% lower than the bid of Brad's company. And then here's more. The Blue Mountain Group hired guards through another company who were not armed. Problems soon arose. 1 month before the attack in August of 2012, with the Blue Mountain Group still in charge of compound security, Ambassador Stevens and his team alerted the State Department via diplomatic cable that radical Islamic groups were everywhere and that the temporary mission compound could not withstand a coordinated attack. The classified cable was first reported by Fox News. I remember that Ambassador Stevens wrote several letters to Hillary Clinton and to state begging for extra security. I'm sure that's tied to what they're talking about here. By August 31st, 2012, the situation had deteriorated to the point that Owens and Torres said the State Department asked them to intervene. But then, which was an admission that they chose the wrong company. So they went in, but they didn't have time. They said it would take 2 to 3 weeks to set up, but 12 days later, the ambassador was killed. Torres learned of the attacks by watching television. He called the circumstances leading up to the tragedy bad decision-making from top to bottom. He said, there was nothing we could have done about it. If we'd had 1 month, who knows what might have happened. And then it goes on. He said, after this was over, I don't see the first name here, but this is a person who worked for Hillary Clinton at State. It's a woman. Her last name is Vizentainer. took one step further. She summoned Jerry Torres from overseas to attend a meeting in her government office in Roslyn, Virginia. Visenstainer said that I and people from Torres should not speak to the media. We should not speak to any officials with respect to the Benghazi program. Torres said he was afraid for his company and hasn't spoken publicly until now. We had about 8,000 employees at the time, and you know we just didn't need that level of damage because these guys, their livelihood relies on the company. I trust that our U.S. government is going to follow chain of command, follow procedures, follow protocols, and do the right thing. Visentainer told Torres, in her opinion, that guards should not be armed at U.S. embassies. She just made that blanket statement, and she said that they weren't required in Benghazi. So I was kind of confused about that. And she said that she would like my support in saying that if it came up. And I looked at her. I just didn't respond. Torres and Owen said that repercussions against their company continue to this day, and that of the 20 security force contracts they've bid on since the conversation, they've lost 18. All right, it's the fifth anniversary of what happened in Benghazi. Four, our ambassador dead, three other men dead, and many, many others wounded whose names you've never heard. And Hillary Clinton was the woman in charge, and we don't know to this day what she was doing that night. We still don't know what President Barack Obama was doing that night. They just went silent. That we also know that they then came out the next day lying to us, saying that that was not a terrorist attack, it was a response to a video, a ridiculous video made by a film producer out in Hollywood about attacking Muhammad. Just exposing the teachings of Sharia and Muhammad's indiscretions with little girls and women. And so they said that that's what caused the attack, and that was an utter lie. And so that's the reason, ladies and gentlemen, if I have to remind you, that's just one. And that's enough. That's enough right there of a reason of why Hillary Clinton should never, thank God she was never elected president. Thank God. So as she is on her little tour talking about all the reasons why she didn't make it to the top, you remember that. She was derelict in her duties, and people are dead because of her decisions or lack of them. And so that's all I'm going to say on that. I only have a couple of minutes left, but there's another story that I'm compelled to share with you this morning. This is out of Breitbart. You may have heard, maybe. Have you heard the names? I realize that when you're not in D.C., some of these names, there are people famous in D.C. who are not famous in other parts of the country. Sally Quinn and John Bradley might be two of those people. Sally was his wife. Ben Bradley was the Washington Post's powerful executive editor from 1968 to 1991. he served as the paper's vice president until his death in 2014. Now, this is the Washington Post, who was one of the most rabid opponents, of course, of all things conservative and Christian. But here's, I'm reading now from Breitbart. For nearly 50 years, the entire social and political world of D.C. revolved around this couple. Bradley and Quinn were the new Camelot. His career took off largely in part because of his friendship with John Kennedy. They were the gatekeepers of who was in and who was out, the elite deciders among the ruling class with the extraordinary power of the Washington Post and, by extension, the rest of mainstream media, to abuse and weaponize their will against the rest of us. All right, here's the story. Now, it's Sally Quinn and Ben Bradley. Now we know because Sally Quinn has just issued a memoir that she was, and is very involved in the occult, that she put hexes on people. She says that three people died as a result of her hexes. It goes into great detail about this, but you can hear the music, and I don't have time to tell you about the details. But this is the sordid thing. These are the sordid things that are happening in Washington, D.C. You remember that John Podesta was accused of eating at these... At the top of my head, they had these certain meals where they were serving horrible things. It was kind of an occultish kind of dinner. And that was one of the things that came out in his email, the ones that Hillary Clinton said had nothing in them. So I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, we are in a spiritual battle, and it's manifesting itself even in details like these. We'll put this this news article also from Breitbart on our Facebook page so you can read and share it. We need to pray because we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers. Sandy Rios in the morning.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
Faith, family,